Coming up on Open Source with Tony Motley, Jenny Risher is a high-profile commercial, portrait, and lifestyle photographer who worked her way to the top in a competitive New York market. After 17 years, she left New York to return to her Midwest roots. Risher's move home has further sparked her creativity, which has spawned a critically acclaimed book, a collaboration with Detroit hip-hop artist, and a featured exhibit in a world-class art museum.
I photographed and documented the Detroit hip-hop scene. I did obviously a ton of research on each subject, and that ended up being an eight-month solo show at the Detroit Institute of Arts.
Jenny Risher is a portrait and lifestyle photographer specializing in advertising and editorial photography. Jenny Risher, welcome to Open Source.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate your time and everything. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you, and I'm just, photography is kind of a solo act. Even though you work with a team, you know, you work, you develop these projects and you put them out there and people just respond. And it's just an interesting way to make a living.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all given gifts as children, and it's up to us to cultivate them or not. And art and photography was just something I was always interested in. You know, as soon as I could pick up a pencil, I was drawing. And photography for me was a quicker way of getting my ideas out. So for me, photography just kind of stuck with me. And it's almost like an obsession. I guess like a writer writes novels, you know, for me, I can't help but just take pictures and tell stories.
Is there an incident or something in your life growing up? I know I knew I wanted to work in a visual medium because I took my mother's Bell & Howell 8mm camera without her permission. In my own action film wasn't very good, but I just remember doing that and being very interested. Was there something that you did or that caught your eye as a child that made you realize this is my thing?
You know, it's kind of funny. My parents, my mom's from Singapore. My dad's Caucasian. He's born and raised in Michigan. So, and I was born in Michigan, but we would always travel. Like every summer we would go somewhere. And one year, I think I was like 13 or pretty young. And we went to all through mainland China. And my parents would love to go shopping because in Asia, there's these great markets and there's just so many wonderful things to purchase and buy and explore. Well, I was stuck holding my dad's super heavy Canon A1 camera bag because they would always have all these bags. I was stuck carrying this camera bag. So then I would often take it out and just mess with it, just play with the focus and start taking pictures. So by way of them, you know, shopping and exploring, I guess by boredom, you know, there was no video games or anything kids do these days, no iPads. So I was stuck with the camera. So I learned how to use it through that trip. And that's when it really stuck, you know, photography really stuck for me.
So were you self-taught or did your dad realize that you had an interest in kind of explain it to you?
He definitely did explain it to me, especially on that trip, you know, what the different lenses are. But fortunately, I went to Lance Cruz North. I grew up on the east side in Macomb County, and we had a photography after-school program, like a photo club. So because of that, I was in the photo club, and you know, I just fell in love with the dark room, and had really encouraging teachers, Mr. Button and Miss Willoughby, and just were just so supportive and encouraging. And for any young adult or young kid, a little encouragement goes a long way. So because of that, I then continued with photography and I entered this scholastic program you can enter when you're in college and you compete for scholarships. And I was able to get a scholarship to the College for Creative Studies from my photography and pretty much almost got a full ride. And from there, went to CCS, graduated with a BFA. And then also from that program at CCS, I went to Parsons School of Art and Design for on a mobility program. And from there, I got introduced to New York. And that's when I, you know, entered the world of like fashion photography and fashion models and high advertising. So it all started from the trip to China and the photo club. So
that's amazing. And it's an interesting journey. Now, when you go to New York and you work in fashion, and of course, there are some other baby steps in between there. But when you get in that world of fashion, what was that experience like for you, especially starting out?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, the biggest hurdle was not creating the images or learning the, you know, learning to work with stylists and makeup artists and all that. You know, that's a whole other collaborative world. It was getting out of my head because, I mean, honestly, I was, you know, come from a middle class family, and you know, Michigan is bland as you can kind of get. And then when you enter to New York, everything is very glossy and expensive, and you know, you're working with like the best of the best from around the world. So for me, it was getting over that idea, like I belong here, you know, like I can do this. So I remember distinctly, like that was my biggest challenge for quite a few years. And then, you know, as you know, your confidence builds up, you're like, yeah, you know, I belong here. You know, I'm creating great images, I'm getting hired. And, you know, that's when you build your confidence up, for me at least.
Was there an incident or an event or something that made you think, okay, I can do this. This is for me, you know, in terms of professionally.
I mean, the whole time I knew I belonged there. You know, when you do something, you're like, okay, this is me, you know, the whole time. I mean, from when I went to Parsons, I went my junior year for a semester. And I was like, this, I belong here. But, you know, it's, again, it's like getting over that, you know, like, you know, you work with like very, like celebrities and like these incredible people. And like, for me, I didn't really come for that. So it's like entering their world so you can capture it authentically. Do you know what I mean? So like, you have to like get into their headspace. And initially, like at first for me, like that was a challenge to kind of like put me aside and just enter their world so then I can capture it as purely as possible.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm sure, I don't care who you are, even if you grew up in New York, when you meet people that you've seen in magazines or on television,
oh, yeah,
it's got to be a challenge. I mean,
it is for sure. But, you know, over time, I realize they're nervous too. You know, it's a very vulnerable thing to be in front of somebody's camera and be trusting that they're going to take the best pictures. You know, oftentimes those celebrities or whomever don't have a say in which pictures are published in magazines or in ads. So, you know, they're trusting you to present the best image of them possible.
What is your, as you've gone and developed your own style and everything in terms of interacting with a subject, what's the way your approach to making that person feel comfortable?
I mean, over the years, I've just learned it's best to just think of them as a friend, you know, as like somebody you've known forever, and you just tell them about your day, tell them about like what you've been doing. I mean, I've gotten really good over the years to read people. You kind of like read their temperament. So if they're, you know, maybe they just want their picture taken, they don't want to talk to you, they just want to sit, you know, they just want to sit in your barber chair and get their hair cut and get out, you know. Or, you know, do you want to relax them? Do you want to, you know, do they want it to be like an event? Or, you know, so you really have to just read like the temperament of the celebrity, of the person. But talking, you know, is a great thing. You just you know, talk about random things, especially if they're celebrities, you know, talk about like everyday things, you know, versus like maybe what movie they were in or, you know, what, you know.
Yeah, it's almost always better to kind of steer clear of that, the things that kind of could be personal, you know.
Right.
Just kind of news of the day is probably safe.
Right.
In terms of for you, looking at your work, the way the color comes across, the lighting, all of that. I mean, you're trained at CCS, Parsons, whatever, but what do you think your strength is and your style is in terms of the portraits I've seen from you?
I think my strength is capturing authentic moments. For me, it's like those in-between moments where, you know, they're staged, but then somebody will say something or we'll talk about something and it's that like authentic moment that kind of comes. And a lot of times, you know, it takes like a half an hour or an hour to get to that moment. Sometimes it's like the first shot. So, you know, I always say like when you kind of know when like a gust of inspiration enters the room and like this magical thing happens and you know you have the shot. And then you know it's over. But I mean, for me, like it took a while to kind of like acknowledge that because, you know, I would shoot, I would keep shooting and shooting and shooting, hoping I would get the shot. But really there's a moment where, you know, you got it and then you're done. Everybody knows you have it. Everybody can feel it, you know, on the shoot.
As you have developed as a photographer, have you learned how to get to that point quicker or just to recognize it? How does that come about for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely quicker. You know, just like you with your interviews, it's like over the years you develop a skill set to kind of make it fast. You know, I'm quicker with my equipment. I'm quicker with my lighting. I know what lighting looks good on people and faces and situations. I have a whole arsenal of, you know, what ifs. Well, you know, what if something breaks or what if something happens or what, you know, so I have a whole toolkit of, you know, the what ifs in my back pocket. I know to like set the mood. I always say a photo shoot, it should be feel like a party, you know, so music is always good. Food, if you have the luxury of time and space. Food is really important, you know, making sure everybody's happy on set. Because it's really about the experience, to be honest. You know, it's like, you know, I hate to say it, but almost anybody can take a picture. But what you'll be remembered for is how you make people feel.
Well, you know, I think that's true. And I think for all of us that do artistic things or, you know, I always said when word processors came out and then Microsoft Word developed. This is, you know, early 90s, whatever. And so people would, you know, everybody basically had the tools to write, but everybody's not a writer. And you definitely don't want to read everything or that most people have written. Just like, you know, every mobile phone now has a camera and a pretty decent camera for what it is. But everybody can't take a Jenny Risher picture. And that's the difference. So there's an art to what you do. I wrote in my mind, and I really don't do this, but I wrote down that you capture beauty, agency, and power. How do you do that?
Oh, wow. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, you know, really, I feel like it's my responsibility to take the best picture of each person I can, and I always have the utmost respect for every person I take a portrait of. You know, it's been an interesting journey because I remember when I was a college student, you know, we would go on the streets, you know, and take pictures of people that are less fortunate. And I remember looking at those pictures and I was why would I take those pictures? Why would I be interested in them? You're not like really presenting the best person, you know, that person in the best light or like in their best headspace. You don't know what those people are going through. So from that point on, I was like, you know, and it was a learning experience, you know, and I think you make mistakes along your journey and you learn from them because nobody really can lay anything out like that. Nobody can lay experiences out for you. You have to kind of get those experiences on your own and learn from them yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. So, and I think as a student, I've been there writing for a school, the university newspaper, or starting out creating stories for television. You're in training, but you need real subjects to do it. But you, at the same time, you have to be aware and sensitive to the people that you're photographing or writing about, because you don't want to offend or hurt them.
Yeah, you know, there's no reason for it. You know, like, you know, if somebody's down on their luck, you know, and you snap their portrait, and you, it's not a portfolio piece for me, it's not a, you know, I don't, I would rather show that person, now this person has a better life and they can support their family, or, you know, that's my storytelling. Like, that's where I'm coming from, like, as an artist. And only through those experiences did I learn that, yeah, that's not what I like to take pictures of. I like to empower people. I like to show people in the best light possible. I like to give them, like, nice lighting and good exposure and, like, happy attitudes. And, you know, I think maybe that's part of my personality showing through in my pictures, is I'm a happy person. I want to show the positive, you know, I'm very positive. I like to show that within people that I photograph.
And it's interesting. I know I filmed something. I don't remember what the client was, but there was a man that lived under a freeway bridge. And I was very hesitant because I wanted to treat him with dignity.
Right.
And so I didn't bring a camera at first. I just talked to him and I asked him what his story was and how he was, and if he would mind sharing his experience with me, as opposed to, you're this oddball homeless guy living under a bridge, can I take your picture? No,
that's right.
Probably not the way to do it. And I think for you, you do that. I would say you collaborate with your subjects. And I wondered, how does that work? Because it's kind of like a process for you.
Oh, yeah. It's an ultimate collaboration. It has to be. Because if I don't have their participation, you know, and story and involvement, it just doesn't work. You know, it's not, like, authentic. Well, for me, for my Deciphered project, my latest one, that was a total collaboration completely with every subject that I photographed. And what that was, it was a timeline, like, history documentation. I don't want to say complete timeline, because you can only photograph and document so many people. So for me, it was like the highlights or whomever I could photograph or get at the time during the timeline that I had. But I photographed and documented the Detroit hip hop scene. And from there, I collaborated with Ironside Hex and Nick Speed and a lot of other collaborators that helped me formulate a list of people that were iconic to the point in time of hip hop history. And from that point on, I then contacted the people, and then we, I did obviously a ton of research on each subject and kind of, like, formulated a photograph I wanted to do. And then I collaborated with the artists to see what, if they had any, ideas. So for that project, it was a complete collaboration. And that ended up being an 8-month solo show at the Detroit Institute of Arts, which...
That's rare. Is it rare to get a photo exhibit, contemporary photos in an art museum? Tell me how that happened, too.
Well, I mean, so I was invited by the photography curator, Nancy Barr, and the first show that they had, it was called Detroit After Dark. I believe it was in 2006, maybe 2006. And at the time I didn't have any, and it was a group show. So it was like a group of 8 photographers, to show Detroit at dark at night. Detroit After Dark was the exhibit name. And I didn't have anything, but that's the, like, the last thing I'm going to tell her is I don't have anything to show. So I, at the time, had just come up publishing my first book called Heart, Soul, Detroit. And I had photographed Eminem. And because of that, like, I had a good relationship with Eminem and his people. And I had become really friendly with all his artists. I would photograph them, like, behind stage or backstage or whatever. They were always around. So I had become really familiar with, like, the Detroit hip-hop scene. So so I was looking at the archives of the DIA museums after I had been invited by Nancy to be in Detroit After Dark. And I had noticed there was no Detroit hip-hop in any and anywhere, like any of the archives, any museums or galleries. So I thought, like, that would be a good thing to show. So I just invited some people to do some portraits, and we went out around Detroit at night and I took some pictures. And I submitted them to Nancy. Four of them were selected for the show, and they were really well received. And then at that point, after they were so well received, it was like encouragement. I just like, well, I need to continue this series.
What did you learn from that experience?
I learned a lot. I learned a lot about race. You know, I learned a lot about the culture. I learned a lot more than just taking the pictures. You know, if you want to get specifically about taking pictures, I learned about, like, lighting at night and exposure and, you know, different lenses for at night to shoot at night, different situations. But the, you know, I didn't have a budget because I was producing it all myself. So I was the stylist. I was the location scout. I was, you know, the historian. I was the producer. I financed the whole project.
I've been there. So, that's fun. I've been there.
I know.
But, you know, I think sometimes, Jenny, too, we end up getting involved, especially in kind of a passion project like that, something that you believe in, mm-hmm. you feel strongly about, and you kind of get into the financing of the project on your own because it's your vision. And you're driven to do it. I mean, you can't do that and make a living doing that. But sometimes you're just driven to do it by just being engaged with the people and with the project. I think those things kind of, they're with you. When you're in the middle of that, you dream about it. You wake up thinking about it. It drives you kind of crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I always feel like if an idea bugs me for more than 6 months or a year, then it means I should do it, you know? And if I start it and I'm still passionate about it, then I just take it to however long the inspiration carries me. But I think that's a sign when you know you should do something is when it won't leave you alone, you know, it keeps tapping on your shoulder.
And I'll tell you, my feeling, I watched the video about Heart and Soul Detroit. And it was, I was moved. I don't know what it was about that. And I'm sensitive, but my goodness, I was moved just watching that. And I don't know why. Do you know why that may be? What did I feel?
Well, I think, the goal with Heart, Soul, Detroit was, you know, I started that project at the time when Detroit had a lot of negative press. It was probably about 2009, 2010 when I first started it. And, you know, I've always had great experiences with Detroit. I mean, my parents, you know, they were farmers. They, you know, my dad had a stall at Eastern Market, 1443. I still remember the stall number. You know, so I was always downtown in Detroit and, you know, I went to school there, you know, the birth of Motown, like all these wonderful things came out of Detroit. And what was portrayed on the news was not Detroit I knew. So I wanted to create a project that kind of showcased all the incredible people that came out of Detroit. So from there, I really, you know, it was more about what's your experience from Detroit? Like, how does Detroit resonate with you? And, you know, I asked a lot of personal questions to the people I interviewed. So for me, it was like a personal journey through those people's experiences on Detroit.
Now, this is interesting. You go to, I mean, people don't realize CCS is one of the finest schools for any artist to attend and one of the most expensive in the country, in the world, really, a world-renowned school. You also went to Parsons, which everybody's heard of. You go to New York, you work in New York, I mean, which is every photographer, artist's dream for the most part. 17 years, but you come back to Detroit. Why?
Well, my family's here, and I'm a Midwest girl, I'm from Mount Clemens, so it's very different than New York. Actually, I think it ran its course, New York, and I have two children, and I really wanted them to be raised, in the Midwest, in Michigan. I wanted them to be, with my parents, my father, my dad still has a farm. My oldest son, Alex, was just beekeeping with him the other day. So, those things you can't really get in New York, and it's a very different experience. And I just didn't want them to grow too fast. And there's a lot of advertising work here in Detroit, with the car industry, fashion. Paris is the fashion capital of the world. Detroit is like the car capital of the world for advertising. So, it's just, I don't feel like I lost anything or am missing out on anything. It's just, you have different chapters in your book.
Interesting.
This is my
too.
Chapter.
I kind of caught what you said is that, you grew up in this kind of a suburban girl, Macomb County, which is, it's not Bloomfield though. It's not a ritzy kind of place at all. It's a more working class community.
Yeah.
But you also, because you had experience on a farm, I don't know if you really grew up on a farm, but you had that experience where you all were at Eastern Market selling product. Is that right?
Yeah.
And so that was your experience growing up. How long did you do that?
I mean, it's since I was born, my parents have always, my grandmother started the business. And now they transition. It was like a fruit and vegetable roadside stand when it first started. And then they started, it got bigger and bigger. And now they transitioned to greenhouses. So currently they have like 5 greenhouses and they just sell flowers, which is a lot. It's an easier thing to do than fruits and vegetables. With fruits and vegetables, you're on a timeline, like an 8-day timeline before it's no good. With flowers, you have a longer lifespan, and people tend to spend on flowers than they will for, food.
Interesting, too. I think, what do you carry with you now from that experience of being a vendor at Eastern Market? I mean, just what do you get from that stays with you?
I mean, I know what hard work is, my parents didn't do it, but we have a lot of friends that, they would sell tomatoes and beans, you whole day, to pick a bushel of beans, green beans for $5, I get paid $1,000, for an hour of my time sometimes. And I didn't do anything. I just took a picture. So, for me, it's like, man, my job is easy, and I love it. It's, hard work is manual labor. You're working from can't see to can't see, in the field. You're hoping you don't get a frost, and all your work that you've done so far is gone. So, to grow up, experiencing that, I think you don't take easy work for granted. Like, I consider my easy work.
It's interesting what you just said, though. It really informs your perspective about money and about work. And I think everybody performs some kind of work. So that part is true. But the other thing is, it's interesting, you present as a very urban, polished woman. I didn't know you were a mom, and I didn't know you were a farm girl. And so you've compartmentalized. Is that something you've done deliberately? How does that work for you?
I mean, for me, you know, I think it's branding. You know, I don't think you need to put it all out there, like on social media or, you know, I think it's, you know, for me, it's like, if I pick three of my best qualities to sell you, because I'm a businesswoman, right? I'm in business. So you don't need to know all my things in my closet. You just need to know the three best pieces, right? Because I'm selling brand, right? I'm selling my services. I'm not really, until you know me, you don't need to know that all that extra stuff, I guess. I don't know.
Well,
I
think that's, you know, that's an interesting point, and it's one of the reasons why this program exists, because we want to talk about contemporary issues. And as a 21st century artist, you're making a real statement about social media. And yeah. Is that something you think actively, or just you've kind of fallen into that? Is that a conscious decision?
You know, I think about it a lot, because, you know, a lot of my clients are corporate clients, you know, and a lot of times when you present bids to clients or, you know, they on a call sheet, you know, these are a lot of times these are presidents of big, you know, Ford Motor Company or, you know, big agencies. They have your Instagram handle on there. So, I mean, like when you look at my Instagram page, I make sure that it's like pretty tailored or as best as possible. You know, people's Instagram or their social media, it's like a junk drawer, you know, it's just like a junk drawer. It's like, what are you selling? Like, what's the vision here? You have to have like a clear vision. And I think you can show some personality, you know, cause you want to be human. You don't want to be, you know, so just pictures, you know. I think it's good to show some personal things or thoughts here and there, but I think you just have to tighten it up, tighten your brand, you know, curate your digital footprint, I guess.
That's awesome. There's a couple of things I want to wrap it up, but I just can't help but ask you, as a woman of Asian descent, of white background heritage as well, and in this time of Black Lives Matter and this social consciousness and everything that's going on in America today, how has that impacted your views of the world and what we are experiencing right now?
I mean, I just can't believe it's 2020 and we still have this conversation. The conversation is going on. I mean, the people I love the most and have influenced me the most, you know, my photography teacher, you know, after school teacher, Mr. Button, he was African American. I mean, the people that have inspired me the most have been of color. And I just can't. It hurts that this conversation even exists, and that, you know, it's hurtful, you know, and it's wonderful to see the support of people coming together so we can end this, you know. But it's also interesting too to see, you know, people that I thought were cool aren't so cool. You know, I think it's really kind of exposed a lot of people in different ways, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. I can say this too, as an artist. I remember I interviewed Wynton Marsalis, jazz musician, and I asked him, what's the role of an artist in times like this, turbulent times? And he said that an artist will, because you believe your work reflects the times. And so he said an artist will say yes to what's going on, and that's reflected in their work, and sometimes disagree. How do you express that in your work?
I mean, honestly, like, never thought about it, but I mean, a lot of my work has African American people in it. I mean, all the people that I choose to highlight are African American. It's not a conscious decision at all, but it's the people I photograph to me are incredible. They're inspiring. You know, they inspire me. I love their stories, you know. So maybe my part in helping is, I don't know, raising awareness or uplifting. Although I do not do the work with that intention. It's just my interest. If I think somebody's really cool, I'll want to photograph them and, you know, share their story. But I don't know. I think as artists, we do have a responsibility, but I think at the same time, if it's not done authentically, then just, I don't know. That's a tough one, because people are people, and cool. If you're cool, I'm cool, you know? I felt it as being an Asian American person. I mean, I've definitely had a ton of racial things thrown at me, and, you know, but I mean, nowhere near, you know, the daily constant struggle that's, you know, given to African American people. I can kind of relate. I can, you know, so maybe that helps, that perspective. I don't know. It hurts, you know, because it's like I said, all the people I love are, you know, African American, you know, and people of color. So I don't know why that kind of divide continues, you know.
That's unfortunate. Where can people see Jenny Risher's work if they're interested in seeing some of the things that we've discussed?
Yes, my work, I have a website. It's called, it's just jennyrisher.com. I'm on Instagram, and that's it right now. I'm out there.
Well, I think anybody that's interested and wants to see some really, really powerful, inspiring images. And if you like music, you like Detroit, you like history, definitely check it out. Jenny, I really appreciate you spending this time with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you. Thank you for taking the time to research and put it all together. I sincerely appreciate it.
You're welcome. And I'm honored just to talk to you. My guest today has been Jenny Risher, photographer, instructor, author, and everything in between. This is Open Source with Tony Motley. Like it, share it, tell a friend. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Open Source with Tony Motley is a production of Duet Digital Media and McLaughlin Media.